Thank you. My name's Bill. I'm an addict. And
I'm
grateful to be here to help NA celebrate the fellowship. And that's what it's really all about, the convention. And I will tell you, NA, I owe everything I have and everything I am to NA. No question. We're here to talk. Dee had asked me to come speak about the healing process. And when she brought up the topic, the first thing that occurred to me is what you're really talking about is the steps. Because we all come in here in one form or another broken people. Emotionally, spiritually, physically, mentally broken. Certainly that was the case for me. Just to give you a little bit of background about me, I mean, I grew up in an affluent family. I had pretty much all the privileges that someone could ask for. I went to the finest schools. I graduated from law school and started a practice. But in the end, it was me in an abandoned building or a garage with people nicknamed Rat, Snail, Torch, Snake Woman, smoking a freebase pipe. Okay, that's where I ended up. And shortly before I came into the program, I remember huddling up with those guys, meeting them at the usual stomping ground, and it was unusual because they had a lot of coke and a lot of money, and either it was one or the other or none. And what I had learned days later was that they had just held up a person coming out of a grocery store, shot him, left him in a pool of blood, taken his money, and bought coke. And I knew that's where I was headed. Instinctively, I knew that's where I was headed. And I had an epiphany. And that epiphany brought me in here. It brought me back. Because actually, before that time, on the 50th anniversary of our sister fellowship, I walked into my first 12-step meeting. But it was really as a gimmick to get out of trouble, to get the heat off. And but, you know, something in that meeting planted a seed. So when I came back, and actually when I found NA, you know, the other fellowships for me just aren't slimy enough. You know, when I found NA, I found home. When I heard someone share that smoking coke was like fucking a gorilla, you're not done until the gorilla says you are, I found my way home, okay? And that was a little over 32 years ago, on February 22nd, 1986. You know, I started using when I was 11. One of my vivid childhood memories was watching my mother jump out of a window to try and kill herself. I was a mama's boy. I grew up and I knew three things, basically: family, school, and baseball. And I followed my mother everywhere. And when I saw her jump out of that window, my life changed. And what I didn't know then, and I know now, is that childhood trauma can be a precursor for using. Okay? We're all here because of some trauma, one form or the other. Right? And that sent me down a path. Shortly after that, my parents packed up my brother and I and sent us up to upstate New York, and it was the summer in 1969, the summer of love, and they landed us in a camp, and I might as well landed on the moon, because the music was Jimi Hendrix, the language was what I had never heard before, and that, from then on, I took my cue, that the way to get attention, the way to get noticed, was you do the craziest shit you can do. Okay, and I became a daredevil, motorcycles, cars, hang gliding, rock climbing, whatever I could do, whatever dare I could take, I did for the next, basically, 15 years. And eventually, though, it led me to that garage with those same guys. Now, you know, I will give you what has been the prescription for me to heal. And that's what this program really is all about, is to heal. As I said, we come in here broken. We come in here physically, emotionally, spiritually broken. There's a void in our life. So the prescription for me is the steps, which boils down to 8 words. Okay, don't use. All right, trust God. Clean house. Help others. Okay. That's the prescription for healing and recovery for me. Let's talk about them. Don't use. Just no matter what, don't use. Don't use. Don't give up until the miracle happens. It's happened in my life. I can tell you I've grown up. You know, when I came into NA at the age of 26, I had the emotional maturity of, at best, a teenager. I've grown up in this program. I've raised a family in this program. I've built a practice of law in this program. I run a restaurant that I co-own in this program. I have a daughter who is my best friend, the apple of my eye, in this program. I have friends, fellows. I have people that I can lean on and go to. I have everything I need directly because of this program. Just don't use. One day at a time, don't use. They told me that you come in here, just it'll get better a little bit at a time. A little bit at a time, and by the time you get a little bit, accumulate more time, you can look back and it's like a quantum leap. It doesn't feel like it when you're getting there. The last year I've shared this to people who know me has been a tough year for me. Let me backtrack. When I had, people who know my story know that when I had 10 years, I was coming out of a meeting in D.C., and I was carjacked by two armed bandits. They abducted me. They drove me to a remote alley in Montana Terrace, Northeast Washington, ordered me out of the car, shot me in the back, and left me for dead.
Wow.
And that was in 1996, right before the 4th of July. And I got shot in the back. The bullet ricocheted off my hip and went out my abdomen. It blasted the sciatic nerve bundle, so my left leg was paralyzed at the time. It hit an artery, so I was bleeding slowly to death. And I was lying in that alley, and I cried out, and I said the Lord's Prayer and the Serenity Prayer and the Prayer of St. Francis and any other prayer I could say. And the last thing I remember is saying, God, please don't let me die. I have too many things left to do. And I looked up, and there was a Doberman pincher that had heard me, that evidently got out of its home, found me, alerted its owner. They came, called for the ambulance. I was taken to MedStar Hospital, and by the grace of God, survived. But it was a tough road of recovery. They told me that I wasn't going to walk again normally. They told me that I had to be prepared for a life of diminished capabilities. And I had a nurse there, Nurse Cratchit type, one of these old nurses, said, you're going to take a step, all right? You're going to take another step. You're going to keep stepping until you step your way out of here, all right? And she rode me, and the people there rode me, and I had people bringing meetings to where I was. I had people praying in church basements that I had never been to. And I am here to tell you the power of prayer. I am a testament to the power of prayer. Okay? That's what I mean about trust God. All right? When I first came into the program, I had difficulty with that concept. I think I had an understanding of a higher power, and for me, one of the old timers told me that in the shape I was in, any two children constituted a higher power than me, so shut up and listen. And then it evolved to the group was my higher power, and then I discovered a higher power than that, call it a God in my understanding, that has been with me that entire time. And it, like I said, there were some struggles there. I remember the 4th of July, 1996, I was laid up in MedStar Hospital. As I said, the doctors were telling me, you know, you may never walk again. Fireworks were going off from the monument in the background. And I remember saying, God, why did you forsake me? Why did you forsake me? Why did you do this to me? And then I had an epiphany, just like that epiphany in that garage that brought me here, then maybe I ought to be grateful. Maybe I ought to be grateful I'm alive. Okay? And that Nurse Cratchit, she pounded that into my brain every day. You're here. You can make it. Impossible is a big word thrown out by small people. And you can do it. And so, you know, God has been... When I read the literature of NA, and I've started to read the literature more lately, I got to confess, the basic text, and there's some great readings about healing, you know, in times of illness, and the Living Clean book, and the basic text, and they all talk about basically how we heal. And again, it all comes down to the principles of the program. And having and being able to lean on a higher power is one of the cornerstones of that process. It is a process. Clean house. They say the same attic we'll use again. Okay. And I was talking about the last year. When I was shot, that was the last day I smoked a cigarette. I had a pack of Newports in my front pocket, and one of the guys snatched it out and said, "Give me that motherfucker," and that was the last day I smoked. I was determined to have something good come of that incident. Well, about a year ago, I was playing in a basketball game, my sort of regular pickup game, and I became lightheaded and almost fainted, and I went to the sideline and I started coughing up blood. And I went to the doctors and they said, "You got cancer and you've got lung disease." And I said, "You gotta be kidding me. I've smoked in 20 some years, right?" And they started talking about plans, all right? And I started thinking to myself, again, "God, why'd you forsake me?" And then again, that light went off in my head, okay? And that's that's where I get to help others. I've got to share my experience and hear others that have gone through what I've gone through to be able to heal, to come in here. The therapeutic value of one act helping another is without parallel. Better believe it. I'm reminded of the old Chinese story, right? There's a story about an old farmer in China, right? And he, his prize mare escapes from his farm. And all the villagers remark, "What terrible luck, what bad luck." And he says, "Bad luck, good luck, who knows?" A week later, that horse comes back with a litter of ponies. "What great luck, what great luck you had at the farm. Bad luck, good luck, who knows?" A week after that, his son's breaking in one of the ponies and he's thrown and breaks his leg in four places. "What terrible luck, you know? Bad luck, good luck, who knows?" A week after that, the Chinese government comes through the village and drafts all eligible young men for war, and the farmer's son escapes because of his broken leg. What great luck, you know? And when I was shot 22 years ago, and I had that last cigarette, and it was snatched out of my pocket, and I was laid up in that hospital, I thought that was the worst luck I could ever have. But you know what? It prolonged my life, because I stopped smoking that day. And 22 years, and it bought me at least 22 years. That's for sure, because I smoked a lot of coke and a lot of other things. And so bad luck, good luck, who knows, right? When I, 7 years ago, I was in a card game, and we were playing Texas Hold'em, and I had a straight flush, right? Unbeatable, right? The nuts. Another guy had four of a kind, so he thought that one of my cards had been burned, and he bet me an interest in a restaurant that he had a better hand. I'll take that bet. You know what? I thought I hit the lotto. Donald Trump lotto, right? Half a restaurant. Haven't made a dime in that freaking restaurant. Bad luck, good luck, who knows? But you know what? I've also employed over 100 people at that restaurant over the years, right? A lot of people in recovery. Some who've got years, some who go in and out. Had a guy overdose right in our parking here. Bad luck, good luck, who knows, right? That's what this program is really just about, having a better perspective on life. Because in order to heal, attitude is everything, right? That's what that nurse Cratchit told me too. You will have a quicker, speedier recovery if you have a good attitude, and fake it until you make it. All right. The other thing I will talk. I mean, the beauty of the 12 step and helping other people is that anybody can do it. I've had meetings where I've come in and people with 1 minute have helped me. I was in a meeting not too long ago where a guy had relapsed after a long period of time and blown off half of his face, right? And he was in there sharing about it. And I'm, before that meeting, worried about all my problems, right? So we have to look at, you know, there are a lot of people that have it worse off, and make a gratitude list. At times of hurt and times of pain, that's when that gratitude list is most important. When I was new, I had I had one of these sponsors who was really big in giving me these tapes of various speakers. And he gave me the tape of Bill W., the person who started all 12-step programs. And he was talking to his wife about how he was inviting in all these addicts and alcoholics into his house to spread the message. And they basically would trash the place and come in and out and, you know, use again and come back and come in and out. And he turned to his wife, Lois, and he said, "This isn't working. It's not working." And she said, "Yes, it is. You're clean, aren't you?" So it's by giving it away that we keep it. How much time do I have left, by the way?
Like 13 minutes.
Really? The healing process in here is no big secret. It's just the principles of the program. We have to have a good attitude. We have to have gratitude. We have to tell the people in our lives how much we appreciate them. Okay. I will tell you, when I was shot that and after a kind of a grueling recovery, 400 days to the day after that shooting, my first and only child was born, okay? And I was a criminal defense attorney, okay, at that point, pretty much exclusively. I named my daughter Miranda, okay? And after that shooting, I became an advocate for victims of violent crime. So one door closes, another opens, right? And that became a part of my practice for a number of years. And, you know, I got the opportunity to pass legislation and to work with victims of violent crime in court. I got the opportunity to go into jails. It's called restorative justice with survivors of family members whose spouses or children were killed in violent crimes, and to talk to pretty hardcore criminals about the other side of the coin, how the spillover effect of their actions. And it's hard to get through to a lot of them, okay? But after one session in a prison in Pennsylvania, 6 months later they sent us all these evaluations, right, of some of the inmates, and, you know, they would talk about, basically give their assessment of the whole thing and how we each did individually, and, you know, some of them say didn't get anything out of it, some of them would say thanks for the insight on the other side of the program. And I was reading these with my fiance at the time, and I came to one, and on the front of the page it said, "If I only had an hour to live, I want to spend it with Bill H." And I turned to my fiance and I said, "See, I got through to this guy. I finally got through." And she said, "Did you see the asterisk below? Turn around the other page." So I turned it over and said, "Because an hour with Bill H. is an eternity." So we have to have humor and laugh at ourselves in the program too. Okay, that's a prescription for recovery. So, like I said at the beginning, everything I am, everything I have is directly attributable to this program. I am a follower because of NA. I am a son, even though my parents have passed many years ago. My mother's words to me before I came into the program were, "You are a liar, a cheat, and a thief." And those words rang in my ears for many years. And she got to see me in recovery for a considerable period of time before she passed away. I got an opportunity to make amends. And, you know, the amends process is what I was talking about again with the cleaning house. It's really about learning how to forgive ourselves, even though we're making amends to others and we think we're seeking forgiveness or seeking their forgiveness. We're learning to forgive ourselves. I will share one more story, and I know I haven't gotten my full time. You know, when I was a teenager, I was incorrigible. So my parents packed me up and they sent me off to my uncle. He was a Marine and a former professional baseball player. And part of my love for baseball, which had already started before they were developed, basically when I lived with him. But one of the things that I carried for many years and used over as an excuse to use for many years was that shortly, he died very suddenly. He went out for a run, only in his 40s, and died of a heart attack. And shortly before he went out on that run, my last words for him to basically were, "Fuck you, you don't understand." Okay? And then he died. And I carried that guilt for many, many years and smoked many, many bowls of coke over that and other drugs. And in the program, somebody suggested to me, "He's dead, how can I make amends? How can I make amends to this person?" They said, "Well, what did he love to do? He loved baseball. Well, why don't you be a coach? Little League coach." Epiphany. Bell goes off. Another, you know, God speaks in mysterious ways, right? The message. So I became a baseball coach for a Little League team, and they were like the Bad News Bears the first year. They lost every game, couldn't do anything right, you know. And 2 years later, they were runner-up in the state championships. And one of the guys played professionally from that team. But that's what I'm talking about. And with the amends, is that there's a ripple effect of it, and it by making that one amends, I was able to drop that guilt and also have a rewarding experience out of it. I love NA. I when I came in, I thought my life was over. I'd never have fun again. I was sentenced to NA, right? Bad luck, good luck, who knows, right? It's the best thing that ever happened to me. So with that, I'd like to thank you for coming out and listening to me, and I hope I see you in a meeting soon.